On this episode of FPL 360, we review Game Week 7. So we're coming off of what I can only describe as the most underwhelming Arsenal-Manchester United match I've ever watched.
What did it take, like 30 minutes to get a shot on target?
I mean, we had the Scott McTominay goal, which was sweet, and then Aubameyang scores. I expected a lot more out of this match. I thought it was going to be... I was actually confident in United... for some odd reason, but I was very disappointed in the product on the pitch from both sides.
Yeah, I mean, considering the amount of shots that Arsenal's been allowing, you really expected that this was going to be a pretty open game, and it was anything but.
I mean, is there anything you can take away from this match?
Realistically, my only takeaways are when it comes to McTominay and Saka for Arsenal, and that they are definitely worth a look moving forward. And outside of the guys who we already knew were worth playing, namely Aubameyang, everyone else has question marks.
Yeah, Saka, it looks like he's going to get a run while Lacazette is out. In FPL, he's at 4.5, and he's listed as a midfielder. Is he someone to consider, I guess, if you're on a wild card or if you need a budget option in midfield?
Yeah. I mean, considering, like, looking at my own team right now, my fifth midfielder is Danny Drinkwater, offering absolutely nothing. Just having a playing fifth midfielder that's not Dendonaker makes that much of more of a difference. So I definitely have no issues with adding him if you're on a wild card.
Yeah, I think there's definitely value there. I'm not as high on him in Fantrax because I'm assuming someone is going to bid on him via waivers where he's available. If you could get him after waivers go through and add him for free, or get him without having to spend free agent budget, I would consider it. And he is listed as a forward in Fantrax. But I don't think there's enough long-term value to warrant or to validate using a high waiver claim.
Unless you had no forwards.
Yeah. McTominay is a little bit more intriguing in Fantrax. He's been in a good run of form with his goal. He now has a goal and an assist in his last four. Double digits in three of his last four. He's at 50%, 57% owned, which I guess isn't too surprising based on how he's been performing. But is this a growing trend? Like, do you see him being a guy with a 7 to 8 point floor moving forward?
I mean, it's starting to look closer to the norm than not, because he seems to have a pretty expansive role even with Paul Pogba on the field. And in his last four, he has 16.5, 10, 9, 16.5 again, with only one goal and one assist in that time. He's definitely deserving of a run out as your midfielder four or five.
Yeah, I think the issue with him, I would say he should be owned in 12 team leagues, and he's probably, based on form, he's probably a fringe starter. I don't know about him in a 10-team league, though.
So, one question. If you're looking at players that are performing similarly right now, would you prefer McTominay or Declan Rice?
I would say McTominay, just because he's able to get forward more. And I don't think that's necessarily, it's just the opportunity is there for him to get forward, because United's midfield is just a bunch of wet blankets. Whereas in Rice, I mean, he probably has a more sustainable floor. I guess in terms of week-to-week value, McTominay probably has a higher ceiling, which is why I would lean towards him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Rice is another interesting guy. And since we're talking about West Ham, that's one of the matches I wanted to talk about in this episode. The Hammers are now unbeaten in their last six matches, and they've moved up into the top four after drawing Bournemouth 2-2. Obviously, the headline here, though, for the second match in a row, Andre Yarmolenko and Aaron Cresswell provided their goals.
That they did, and Yarmolenko's finish in particular was a very nice one.
I love Yarmo. I was a huge fan of when he arrived last season. Obviously, I was cut short by injury. Cresswell's another guy. He was a fantasy darling a couple years ago when he was the regular left back. I know Yarmolenko's probably the more interesting one in FPL. With three goals in his last four, he's the third most transferred in player. He's selected by 2.6% of clubs right now. At six, is he the best or most cost-effective midfielder to target going into game week eight?
There are only two, in my opinion, and we're going to end up discussing both of them, so I won't talk about who the other one is yet, even though you already know who it is. But like, when you're looking at midfielders in like that 5.5 to 6.5 or so range, Yarmolenko playing in that front three heavily rivals Mason Mount as the best option, especially considering West Ham doesn't have a bad matchup for their attack until realistically Liverpool in game week 18.
Yeah, West Ham has Crystal Palace at home, Everton away, Sheffield United, Newcastle, Burnley. So that is a very good run. I'm not sure where I stand on Cresswell. I mean, he's in my column this week for the second straight week. Last week I had tipped him as someone to add if you're in a 12-team league and to stream if he was available. I'm not fully confident he's totally pushed out Masuaku, just because Masuaku is in good form.
I'm not sure that he can, to be honest. Even no matter what he does, one bad performance and Masuaku will be coming back, which is a good thing for Pushkin to keep putting the ball in the back of the net, but a bad thing for fantasy owners who want him to start.
Yeah, what would you be looking to, I guess, bid in terms of free agent budget or waiver claim on Cresswell in Fantrax?
I think I got him for $1, if not for free. I realistically wouldn't want to use anything higher than a mid-level waiver claim, and I probably wouldn't bid over $5 of FAAB. And I definitely wouldn't trade for him.
Yeah, I would like to get him in FPL, but that's something you can't really do until we have a better idea of how much of a hold he has on that left back spot. I mean, goals in back-to-back matches, that's obviously great. The free kick against United, and then he had one from open play against the Cherries. He has a pretty high ceiling, though, in my opinion, which is why he had a price drop, so he's at 4.9. I guess if he starts, how many more starts in a row would he need for you to consider him an FPL, or do you think that's just too risky?
I'd probably leave him two games, just because the game that you want to see him start is their matchup against Crystal Palace. But then they go to Everton, so if he does start versus Crystal Palace, I don't really feel the need to add him ahead of a trip to Everton. But then you'd want him for back-to-backs against Sheffield and Newcastle United.
Looking at Bournemouth coming out of this match, something I found that was pretty interesting, Callum Wilson has reached 5 goals, the quickest he has in a single season in his career. He's got 5 through 7. Last season, he ended with 14. He scored 5 goals in his first 9 matches. Where do you stand on him in FPL? He's someone I feel like has gotten kind of overlooked, with everyone focusing on, you know, what it seems like pretty much everyone else. He's at 7.9 right now, and the Cherries have Arsenal, Norwich, Watford, United.
So what's tough is how to add him. Like, looking at my team, I'm running Pukki, Aguero, and Firmino. I could theoretically upgrade Pukki to Callum Wilson, but I don't want to do it this week with Aston Villa going to Carroll Road. But after this week, that's a definite option for moves that I'm heavily looking into.
What do you think he's going to end up with this season in terms of a total for goals? I mean, last year, he's kind of like, is 14 goals what we should expect? Is that like a realistic number? I mean, he's been hurt.
That's the problem. It always depends on his knees. A healthy Callum Wilson for an entire season is probably an 18 to 20 goal scorer. The problem is he usually finds a way to miss some time due to knee issues or hamstring issues. And also, another ding to his value is his own teammate in Josh King being... Is he still at 6.4 or has he gone back to 6.5?
King's at 6.3.
He dropped again? Goodness. Because Josh King, since moving out to the left-hand side, has been electric. And while Dominic Solanke hasn't done anything to realistically stay as the central forward, the fact that Bournemouth's attack's been clicking because of him making dribbles up there and King and Wilson overloading teams on the left-hand side is definitely something to look at.
Yeah, I like Wilson, obviously, more. I mean, King's definitely not a bad idea. I mean, King's somebody who could be maybe a pivot from someone like Teemu Pukki, since he's gone goalless in 2 straight matches. He's the most transferred out player this week. Is it time to pivot?
I don't want to pivot off of Pukki this week, because the only team outside of, like, the number three team in shots allowed in the entire Premier League is Aston Villa. Teemu Pukki and Norwich seem to only perform at home, so Aston Villa going to Carroll Road seems like an attack, a game where you want to start all of your Norwich attackers. And like, I understand that they haven't been performing right now, but it's a different story in front of their home crowd.
Yeah, their three next matches at home: Villa, United, Watford, and those are split by a trip to Bournemouth and a trip to Brighton. I'm going to stick with Pukki. I really hope people start shedding him.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm expecting at least 2 goals from those home matches.
He scored 5 goals in 3 home matches.
Yeah, I mean, he's been lights out there, so I'm not too shaken by him. Another forward in that budget range around King, Chris Wood. He scored again 2 matches in a row. Is it time to run with Wood?
Considering we spent the first 4 matches of the season saying Chris Wood is due, and now he's finally gotten some goals, I think it's definitely time to run with him. unfortunately, it's really hard to do it in FPL, but he should be owned in 10-team or larger draft leagues.
Yeah, if you look at Wood, pretty much did had absolutely no points coming into game week 6. He had the brace, 27.5. And then against Villa, he had the goal for 12 points. I'm a little bit thrown off by him in Fantrax. I actually do like him in FPL just because of the differential appeal. But I'm a little bit shaken by him in Fantrax because he's not a high-volume shooter. So he's very goal-dependent. I think he should be owned in 12-team leagues. Is there a case for him in 10-team leagues, or is he still just a deeper league guy?
I'd say looking at some of the forwards who are underperforming, Raul Jimenez, their owners need to find something, and Chris Wood could definitely be that.
Would you put... Let's see who else has been. So I'm looking at this week. We have a guy like Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He scored a goal in each of his last two starts. He's at 30% owned. And you have Wood. He also has a goal in each of his last two starts. He's at 45%. Which guy would you prefer to add this week?
I prefer adding Wood solely because of the fact that I'm more confident in his starting spot.
I'm curious, do you think Wood or Ashley Barnes is going to end up with more goals this season?
I'd say Ashley Barnes. The thing is that Ashley Barnes's goals come in like 5 to 6 game stretches where he'll score in every single one, whereas Wood's more likely to do 2 games on, 2 games off, which is what I'd rather own in a draft league.
Yeah, I think Wood is more streaky than Barnes is, so at least just looking at what he's done since he's arrived at Burnley. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if Wood rattles off another 2 or 3 in the next couple of matches and then goes cold for a bit. So kind of playing the hot hand. Another guy who's in form at the moment, John McGinn, he's been absolutely buzzing for Villa. He had a goal in that draw with Burnley. He now has a goal in each of his last two matches. He's the 5th most transferred in player in FPL this week. He is not a differential at 9%, but at 5.7, I'm guessing he's the other midfielder you were talking about when we mentioned Yarmolenko.
He is exactly the other midfielder.
What kind of a midfield construction would you be looking to bring McGinn into?
That's where it gets a little tricky, because I'm running a 3-4-3, and my two budget midfielders there are Mason Mount and Yarmolenko. I could theoretically run a 5-man midfield, but that would require shedding Timu Pukki to make that happen. Because if I own McGinn, I'd want to start him every game. So I think he's realistically someone that you'd take the chance on instead of Mount or Yarmolenko, which is why I decided on Yarmolenko, because I liked his long-term fixtures more.
Yeah, if you look at Villa's matches, they have Norwich, Brighton, then they're at City, home against Liverpool. Those are their next 4. So I like West Ham's fixtures from that perspective. In December, Villa have Sheffield United, Southampton, Norwich, Watford, Burnley. So that's when I would start to look at McGinn. So I do agree with you. I think Yarmo is the move at the moment. But the only thing I guess we might have to worry about is if McGinn keeps performing by that time in December, he'll probably be around 6.1.
Which I'm okay with paying that for him. He's worth it.
The match I've been dying to talk about, I wanted to lead off with it, but I figured we can do it at the end of this episode. It'll be a nice way to send everyone into the week. Leicester City absolutely demolished Newcastle, despite the absence of James Maddison. They're now 2 points off of Manchester City, 7 points adrift from league leaders Liverpool, who they face this weekend. And most importantly, Ayoze Perez finally got an offensive return.
Yeah, file that under took long enough.
I mean, it was a nice 1-2, but that goal was, I mean, that was all Ricardo Pereira, excuse me.
Yeah,
but second game in a row with a goal. I mean, he went pretty much the length of the field.
Yeah, he is 100% legit. And I am very angry that a couple of weeks ago that I didn't go with my gut and add him in favor of Lucas Digne.
Yeah, so I'm considering doing that move this week. Everton are in trouble. They have Burnley, West Ham, Brighton in the next three. But I'm not confident in the Toffees right now with everything being out of sorts under Marco Silva. If you look at Leicester's run, they have Liverpool, then Burnley, Southampton, Crystal Palace, Arsenal, and then a bunch of nice matches leading into December. Even though he's expensive, is Pereira like the premium non-Liverpool defender to own at the moment?
I'd say if you're talking about premium guys, yes. And I'm going to wait a week since he has Liverpool away and I want to deal with my goalkeeping situation this week. But he is 100% someone that I'm looking to add very soon. Because realistically, if you're looking at premium defenders, it's not very good this season.
Yeah, I will, like you said, I'll probably wait until after the Liverpool match to get him in. I've sat on my transfer this week, and I'm looking to get rid of Emerson since I guess he'll be back after the international break. But having sat on a transfer this week, I can kind of make the moves I want to this time around. But on Leicester, where would you put them right now, I guess, in the Premier League power rankings? Like, obviously, I have them behind City and Liverpool. But
it's right where they are at third.
Is there a case to be made for them to actually pose a legitimate push for a top four finish this year?
If I had to do my top four right now, for what it'll be at the end of season, it'll literally be Liverpool and City in some order, Leicester, and then Spurs.
Now, granted, this performance came against a terrible Newcastle side, but there's something to be said. There was no James Maddison. Wilfred and Ndidi popped up with a goal. Vardy bagged a brace. But I think we can still consider this a very good performance from the Foxes, considering how clinical they were. Or should we be, I guess, slightly weighting it since Newcastle is Newcastle?
I don't think this is completely Newcastle is Newcastle, because as Leicester has shown by also taking down Spurs in their visit to King Power, they're a damn good team.
The Magpies did not have a single shot on target and only had three touches inside Leicester's box, kind of to highlight the issues for Steve Bruce's club. I don't see a way that they stay up unless Joelinton or Andy Carroll goes on an absolute tear. But right now, are they probably most nailed on for relegation?
It's somewhere between them and Watford.
Yeah, if you look at the table right now, Newcastle is pretty much at the bottom of every offensive metric. And in terms of goals for, you have Newcastle and Watford both on four. And then the next club is Brighton with five. So I don't know. It's not looking good for them. Is there any hope moving forward?
I don't know. I want to believe in Newcastle's defense and their front three, but they got to get that midfield sorted out. And whatever's going on with Steve Bruce and Jonjo Shelvey just needs to get settled, because in Newcastle's only working midfield, Shelvey has to be in it.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I love Andy Carroll. I don't see him, even if he does come good, I don't see him being able to stay fit. Almiron, I don't think he's been terrible, but he's obviously not set up for success in the way Steve Bruce wants to play. Like you said, their defense is good. I like Dubravka. But I don't see them. I just don't see it. I don't know where the goals are going to come from. I haven't taken a deep look at how their matches stack up and who they could be playing towards the end of the season. But I think they could be staring down relegation probably sooner than any other club this season. I wouldn't be surprised if with 7 or 8 matches left, they're already eliminated.
I mean, I unfortunately can't disagree with you.
The last thing we're going to talk about today is Riyad Mahrez. He was the main man in City's 3-1 win at Everton. He has 3 goals and 6 assists this season. What is it going to take for him to be a solidified regular in this City team, or is he doomed to rotation regardless of how he performs?
Unfortunately, just because it's City, everyone's due for rotation. And when asked about rotation, Pep didn't like make anyone feel better, considering that he basically said everyone's gonna play. So it kind of looks like we're gonna get a 3 to 4 games on, 1 game off, and that's for everyone: Aguero, KDB, Sterling, Mahrez, Bernardo, you name it.
It's obviously too risky to really bank on him in FPL. In Fantrax, I have him in one of the leagues, in a 12-team league, and I pretty much, if it's a good matchup, I'll start him even if he's not in the starting 11, hoping for him off the bench. I have been fielding some offers for him, though. Should managers be looking to sell Mahrez, or
Nope.
do you want to acquire him?
Realistically, I can't, in good faith, recommend selling any City assets. Because just the upside when they play is far too good. So unless someone's like offering you Aubameyang for Mahrez, you're keeping Mahrez. And the one thing I would like to touch on, though, is the starting City players when they don't start. Because so far it looks like the only player who actually gets returns when they come on in that situation is Sergio Aguero.
Yeah, I would say, obviously, as you mentioned, Aguero. I don't mind Mahrez too, just because he's shown he can. He really doesn't need much in order to make things happen.
But when Sterling sits, he normally sits the entire game, or
Yeah,
just
Sterling,
about.
though.
When David Silva sits, he sits most of the game or comes on for only a small period. And even the same thing with KDB.
I mean, in terms of what we've seen in trends, I mean, Mahrez has made 3 appearances off the bench. He's gotten 10, 11, and 17 minutes. The KDB one was situational against Norwich. But I would say Aguero, yes, you're definitely starting him. Mahrez, I mean, at least you know he's going to come on for or at least 10 minutes. And if it's a lopsided matchup, especially with City at home, I would consider him. But I think the rest of the guys are too risky. As you said, Sterling, the one match he didn't feature in the starting 11, he didn't come in at all. And like in terms of David Silva, I just don't think for what he is as a player now that he really has, unless he's going to get something off a set piece or get something gifted, I don't really see him being able to get acclimated in a match in that short of a window when he comes off the bench.
Yeah, that's fair. The most interesting thing with Mahrez is probably the fact that whenever he comes on, he still is on free kicks. So he'll always have at least a shot at goal.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously you don't want to bank on having to play a guy who's not going to start. Also, with Bernardo Silva, I wouldn't mind starting him. I mean, he does have a goal coming off the bench this season. He had one in 12 minutes against Brighton, and then he came off the bench for 10 minutes against Everton, but he didn't have anything. So I guess he falls in there too. But overall, I mean, would you be looking to trade for, do you think you could get any of these City guys right now, or is their value just too high?
I think their value is too high.
I mean, I would have said Bernardo Silva prior to his hat trick.
Yeah, that's the pro. Like, if you were gonna get any, if you're gonna go out and acquire anyone, it's probably Gabriel Jesus. And if there's anyone who I don't want to touch, it's Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he's the only one people would be willing to sell. That's going to do it for this episode of FPL 360. We'll be back sometime later this week with a review of the matches for game week 8. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at FPL_360, and you can find this podcast pretty much anywhere on the internet.